is CKLN 88.1 FM, licensed by the Canadian Radio, Television and Telecommunications Commission to broadcast in stereo at 88.1 MHz on the FM band. CKLN is owned and operated by CKLN Radio Incorporated, which is located at Ryerson University within the Student Campus Center in Toronto, Canada.
At the time of license application, CKLN filed a comprehensive promise of performance with the Commission, and within that document made specific commitments to its operations and programming. The license issued by the CRTC requires CKLN to honor these commitments made in the promise of performance and to comply with the FM radio broadcasting regulations.
A copy of the license with the promise of performance and conditions of licensing is available for inspection by any member of the public at the offices of the Commission and at the offices of CKLN during business hours. Radio frequencies are public property in Canada. CKLN invites your comments and inquiries.
Our mailing address is 55 Gould Street, Toronto, Ontario, postal code M5B1E9, phone number 416-979-5251.
Thank you for tuning in to CKLN 88.1 FM, and good morning.
Okay, so 3708, okay. Paper plastic.
Plastic. That's the magic word. Green police.
Now, is it good for you, baby? It wasn't good for the environment.
Oh!
Green Super Bowl commercial coming on, listening to that. What a weird ad. 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 What a weird ad.
KLN Rude Awakening here on 88.1 CKLN FM on the FM broadband dial, broadcast dial here in Toronto, Canada. CKLN.FM online and Rogers Cable Box 947. Start off with a song that I think a little heavy, a little dark, a little catchy, a little controversial. You know, but hey. That also reflects yours truly. I'm your host, BK, a.k.a. Black Krishna. Mondays, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays from 6 to 7 a.m. Any questions, answers, or suggestions, please do be in touch at blackkrishna@gmail.com. And as a matter of fact, a colleague of mine was in touch yesterday with an event sponsored by the Corporate Knights. Which is a group in Toronto that encourages corporate philanthropy, as well as Enbridge, the gas heating energy giant. And I do have some of the details right here. It says Corporate Knights E3 Canadian Roundtable. So in a nutshell, I was tipped off to go to this event, and someone said, hey, you should probably check this out. And it looked to me like sort of an NAUN Agenda 21 type of thing, where a combination of the North American Union, the SPP.gov sequel to NAFTA, where corporations basically divide up North America and guarantee, you know, only they can do business in certain areas and public-private partnerships, which basically means governments, corporations working together, which basically means you don't have governments aggressively regulating corporations like they used to, because now they're business partners, and if those corporations want to screw us to make a shiny nickel, well, hey, they love their shiny nickels. But I'm not anti-corporate. I'm not anti people making money. I am, however, anti the whole idea of managed capitalism and managed economies, centrally planned economies, which is a lot of what this is. So let me just get into the event in a little bit of detail. I was chilling, working on a whole bunch of ideas yesterday for people in the city of Toronto and elsewhere to take action at this time in history. It just keeps getting easier and easier for us to win. I mean, it just wouldn't be a problem for us to win at all, to get a little inspiration, get a little information, and get a little action, and just, you know, take the country back. It would not be a problem. It could be, a couple of hundred people, you know, working dedicatedly for 6 months. It could be 50,000 people walking out of a Muse concert, you know, going, they will not degrade us. And then going, wait a minute, yeah, we're going to cover up those, you know, torture garden posters in Toronto, where, you know, it's a beautiful woman, black hair, her breasts more or less exposed, briefly covered by her hands, and a torture garden above her head. And we have a torture garden here. As Muse says, they will not degrade us. They will not control us. They will not dehumanize us. If people got that attitude and then they took a look at what was going on, they might be like, wait. I know, there's a reason I like this song. Because it's true. now that I can see it, and I'll do something about it. But all right, so around 5 p.m. at One King West Hotel at Young and King, 4:45 is supposed to start. 5:15 it actually started. The Corporate Knights and Enbridge put on one of their E3 Canadian roundtables. And I was first tipped off by the name of this organization, the name of this group. The roundtables, for those of you who don't know, let's see if I can punch it up in the old Googles here. Round table group. See what that pops. Expert witness roundtablegroup.com. Connect with their authorities. Roundtable movement. Here we go. Gotcha. From Wikipedia. So in a nutshell, and this is Society of the Elect. This is from Wikipedia, but there is some sourcing here, and again, I've independently confirmed some of these things. Historian Carol Quigley claimed that the roundtable groups were connected to a secret society, which South African diamond baron Cecil Rhodes is believed to have set up with similar goals. Rhodes was believed by some to have formed the secret society in his lifetime. The secret society is supposed to have named the Society of the Elect. And let's another Wikipedia entry. Rhodes first formalized his idea with William T. Stead, editor of the Pall Mall Gazette, when he and Stead agreed on the structure of the secret society. This proposed secret society had an elaborate hierarchical structure based on that of the Jesuits, which comprised at the top the position of general of the society, a position modeled on the general of the Jesuits to be occupied by Rhodes, with Stead and Lord Rothschild as his designated successors. An executive committee called the Junta of the Three, comprising of Stead, Lord Alfred Milner, and Reginald Balliol Brett, and then a circle of initiates consisting of a number of notables, including Cardinal Manning, Lord Arthur Balfour, the guy behind the Balfour Declaration, which created Israel, incidentally, and so on. So, Professor Carol Quigley was President Bill Clinton's former mentor at Georgetown Law School. He wrote the books Tragedy and Hope and The Anglo-American Establishment. Whereas a historian for the CFR, the Council on Foreign Relations, a think tank of about 3,000-4,000 of the most influential and powerful people in the world, he was a historian for them, and this was in the 1950s, 60s. He was writing these books about them. He wasn't really against them. He just wished that that they could come out in public and say, yes, you know, we are the people who run the world. So how does this crazy, 100 years ago, this was set up? The Cecil Rhodes set up the organization, which became the Royal Institute for International Affairs in 1920. And then in 1921, they formed the Council on Foreign Relations, and they have satellite organizations throughout the world, including the Council of Canadian Chief Executives here in Canada, others in Commonwealth countries like India and Australia. Okay, so if everybody isn't caught up, in a nutshell, super rich people set up think tanks. Those think tanks come up with policy or ideas they want to influence in the world, and then they're filtered through smaller and smaller think tanks. And these are known as roundtable groups because you're supposed to be in there, scrapping it out, discussing. What are we going to do? What's going on here? How are we going to get what we want? This is a better way to do it. No, this is a better way to do it. And they hammer out ideas until they're ready for the next stage. So I went to a very, very plebeian version of said roundtable yesterday at the One King West Hotel. And some of the featured participants there, it says here, Enbridge presents toward a sustainable energy future. Again, this is Enbridge, the folks behind a lot of natural gas in this country. It says, it is time to recognize the importance that Canadians place on energy, the environment, and the economy. These are not isolated entities, but mainstays of modern society, and Canada needs a bold, innovative, and pragmatic approach to energy that aligns these issues. Developments in transforming technologies and the push for improving the environmental standards used across the economy mean that we need to develop smart, leading-edge, and realistic policy options for Canada. Corporate Knights is proud to host, and Enbridge is proud to serve as a presenting sponsor for, the Corporate Knights E3 Canadian Roundtables. The roundtables will provide fora for discussion that will support development of visionary energy policy options for the whole of Canada. So, here you have it, folks. The Corporate Knights, a philanthropic organization in Toronto that's done some good work, as far as I know. And Enbridge are getting together now to, quote, that will support the development of visionary energy policy options for the whole of Canada. Essentially trying to develop policy for the whole Canada. And at meetings like this, what they do is they basically tell the audience, you know, you're smart enough to get this. And the audience goes, yes, we're smart enough to get this. We are smart enough to understand. Only stupid people don't agree with you. And so the audience is buttered up. And then the audience is invited to give their feedback. And, of course, the feedback is the stuff they were fed. So, absolutely fascinating stuff. But, yeah, All right. So, at this event, and again, there was people here, like the host of the event was Evan Solomon, CBC television broadcaster, journalist, and author. Seems like a nice guy, although I got a lot of this on video, and I got to tell you, a lot of people look fairly stressed because of the dynamic of the event here. Two-time Gemini Award-winning broadcaster and journalist Evan Solomon is the host of the most watched national political affairs TV show in the country, CBC News Network's Power and Politics with Evan Solomon. On the daily broadcast, Solomon interviews all the key politicians and power brokers who affect your life. And so he was the host of this event, and he told a very, very interesting story at the very, very beginning of the event, which just blew my mind. But basically said that he was in Iraq, and it didn't blow my mind because we don't know this stuff. It blew my mind because of, you know, there's what's said and there's what's sort of admitted. And the bottom line is that he basically said that he was on a ship out there in the Middle East, and he was talking to the commander of the USS Harry Truman, a warship out there, and he says, so you know, how long are you guys planning on being in Iraq? And the commander of the warship says, you know what, we're going to be here forever, we're never leaving. And it floored me to hear him say that. He says, we're never leaving. He says that this is, again, broadcaster, CBC broadcaster Evan Solomon, telling him what one of the U.S. Armed Forces personnel, one of the guys in charge of the battleship USS Harry Truman, said. He says, we're never leaving. As long as you keep sending us, you know, troops and supplies, then we're never leaving. I just blew my mind. Because when I listen to the Alex Jones Show and sometimes Alan Watt, others, you know, they talk about how there are two different conversations. There's a conversation for us, you know, here on the plebeian level, and then there's a conversation for, you know, the corporate types to make them think that they're part of the system. And then there's, you know, of course, another conversation above them for some of the real insiders. But this was right at the beginning of the damn meeting, and it was about, you know, 10 minutes into it. And he just lays this out on us, and he says, think about Japan and Germany. You know, we're still there, you know, 50, 60 years after the war. And he said there were 535 military bases worldwide. Bahrain is a mini city. And this is the, quote, the sharp end of the stick of our current energy structure. And one of the things that they're promoting at this event is the idea that We can end wars for resources, which we need to have right now, because we have, you know, military personnel at the choke points of all significant energy usage. Now, we can end wars for resources if we move towards a sustainable energy model. And again, this is why a lot of the controlled left sold Iraq war. It's all about oil. It's all about oil. The war is about oil. The reason that was played up so much by everybody, as opposed to looking for other avenues, is to prepare us for this type of end game right now. But I'm going to try and find this clip from Mr. Solomon, just so I don't get sued. Nah, well, everybody else heard it too, so check this out.
Energy commodities are only one contributor to providing it. And what we've noticed is
that carve out what innovative break transformation.
But we operate, there's so far that we can do anything, we can do this.
Thanks, Toby. Toby mentioned this term energy superpower. I just want to reiterate the goal tonight. Canada plays a unique role in the global energy system. What are the unique qualities that Canada possesses? Can you give us kind of their view of what the unique qualities are? What would contribute to ensure that Canada becomes
so what makes Canada unique?
Superpower? What are the opportunities for Canada to get into our global? Just one quick thing. Last spring, around this time, I spent a couple of weeks in the Persian Gulf with the American and Canadian Navy, and I was on the USS nuclear power aircraft carrier, the Heritage Crew, 500 people. The command specifically, the patrols off Iran, Iraq, some planes to Afghanistan, cover all the troops.
Commander of the 5th Fleet, Iraq, Iran, Afghanistan.
This is what it means to be an energy superpower. I'm very worried about this. That we will never, like, how long do you plan to be here in Iraq to gain this? It will never be. That I've spent here for 20 years of just giving people and bullets because we got there. So, you know, we were in 16 years ago in Japan and Germany, we're still there. But this is what it means. We control the choke points of trade, our team's price is stable, and that's what we need to depend on for energy. So, this is what a good model. Superpower, an energy superpower needs. And I just got to thinking, you go to their, they've got bases all over the world, there's 535 U.S. military bases around the world. One of them is in Bahrain, and it's got 35,000 people that can be there. They've got a university, they've got a Harley Davidson shop. And you realize how much it costs. That version of what an energy looks like. Sharp end of the stick of our current energy structure is very sharp, very expensive, and very dangerous. And it puts into stark relief what we're trying to accomplish tonight. Are there other options? There are all sorts of options that have to do with climate change, market efficiency, energy security, the expense, and the true cost of energy. So tonight we're going to hear some really interesting countervailing principles. What you hear from the captain on the deck of the Harry S. Truman, which is a pretty cool place, I must admit, but not an expensive way to ensure our energy supply in the future. Let me just give you an idea of what we'll do tonight. All the panelists here will have about 8 minutes to do a quick presentation. Then we'll have
And so you get the idea, CKLN listeners. Essentially, if you didn't hear that well, and I apologize for the clip, unusual atmospheric conditions in there at the One King West Hotel for this event, where it was a little hard. But I did record a lot of this on video, record a lot of this on audio, and if you listen to that up close and personal, you can clearly hear him saying, you know, we're never leaving Iraq. Now this is news to most people, and I don't know if Mr. Solomon is going to mention this on his show as something he picked up from commander of a military boat, the 5th Fleet in the Middle East. With 5,500 people under his command, just saying straight up, we're never leaving. We're not leaving. This is an important energy choke point. Don't you understand what we have to tell people so that they don't, you know, get really mad at us? We have to lie to them. But, you know, they pretty much know that by now, and they pretty much accept it. So anyway, that was part and parcel of this. And I'm just going to read down some bullet points of this event, because this is real live journalismo here. It says here, they want to humanize the marketplace. Humanize the marketplace. The idea behind these roundtables as well is that and here in Canada we're always told, you know, they always try and make us feel smart. Oh, we're smarter than the Americans. Oh, we're so much smarter than the Americans. Oh, we're so this. And yet the cover of the Metro today for Thursday, May 27th has an article that says "Got the Frizzies? Humidity giving people bad hair days across the GTA. Air conditioning, ice cream, t-shirts, and shorts were essential items around the GTA yesterday as temperature records were smashed for the second straight day." And it says, "Got the frizzies?" So this is how they do it. They say, "Oh, you're smart enough to understand this. Some people aren't, but you people are." And then they sell you crazy, crazy, crazy dumbass stuff. It's shocking. And I was there for 2 hours, folks. I do this for the people. I sit in globalist meetings. where the audience is bored too, but they're not sure what to do. These are apparently the people you're supposed to trust and respect. And I was very nice to them, and I still am very nice to them. I could even tell that some of them were getting sick of this type of grind. And I'll break down why in a sec here. But you know what? There are roundtable groups out there. And so I would like to...
President Nicolas Sarkozy threatened to pull...
I'd like to break down what's happening at the highest levels and then come back to what's going on right here.
...say on this radio show on Tuesday. He said he's looking for Sarkozy to pull out. Right again, just pointing out that the guests we have here have stunning analysis abilities. Just incredible. So that's going on. Trilateral Commission wants war with Iran. We're about to cover that in a moment. You heard me right. Trilateral Commission wants war with Iran. This dovetails with Reuters. Israel primed for war with Iran. Netanyahu. Any idea what's going to happen on that front? U.S. faces same problems as Greece. Says Bank of England that the U.S. may go down. Red alert. European power brokers present proposal for new economic and political order, world order, prisonplanet.com. CEO predicts market Armageddon, Dow down to 5,000, red alert. It is all coming up, but I wanted to bring Paul Joseph Watson up. We're going to work on getting Jim Tucker on, but also the We Are Change member. Look how We Are Change just continues to get key news out. And the Love Police, a kind of spinoff of We Are Change, you know, going into press conferences and pointing out that the election in England was totally rigged, where all the candidates were basically selected by the globalists. That made national news. We Are Change in Dublin, standing up to David Rockefeller, pointing out he won't get his world government a week ago before they plunged Europe by design. That's made international news. So just devastating the enemy on every front by injecting the truth that the king has no clothes, that the emperor is but naked. But we have a PrisonPlanet.com article about this top story. Trilateral Commission wants war with Iran. Trilateral Commission member unwittingly tells We Are Change activists of plans for world government. This is so, so important and up on PrisonPlanet.com and InfoWars.com right now. Let's go to the head editor over at PrisonPlanet.com, Paul Joseph Watson, joining us from England. Paul, break this down for us.
Yeah, this is a report by Jim Tucker out of the American Free Press about the recent Trilateral Commission meeting which took place last week in Dublin. And as we know, the Trilateral Commission is the sister group to Bilderberg. It's the entree to Bilderberg, routinely happens about a month or 3 weeks before Bilderberg meet. And they kind of set the agenda for what Bilderberg are going to discuss. And because it's a less influential organization, although it still has many of the same members, the security around the Trilateral Commission meetings is not as intense as it is at Bilderberg, which is why, as we saw earlier this week, the Sovereign Independent Group in Ireland were able to confront David Rockefeller, who's the chairman of Trilateral Commission, both outside the building and inside the building where they were having dinner after one of their meetings. So now we have this story which Tucker writes about today, where a chief advisor to the Russian government, Mikhail Slobodovsky, was not confronted but just got into a conversation with a We Are Change Ireland member named Alan Keenan. And this Russian, Slobodovsky, mistakenly thought he was talking to a fellow Trilateral Commission member because he later mentioned the fact that he was under Chatham House rules, which means they can't discuss anything outside their own inside circle. But he fooled him. How he did it, I don't know. Obviously, you'll probably get him on the show, and he'll be able to go into it in more detail.
Yeah, we're trying to contact different We Are Change groups over there this morning via your recommendation, Paul. Continue.
But he got into a conversation with this Trilateral member who basically told him, and this is what Tucker quotes, quote, "We are deciding the future of the world. We need a world government." And referring to Iran, he said, quote, we need to get rid of them. And then, quote, suddenly Slobodovsky noticed that Keenan's name tag was different from the TC label, Trilateral Commission label, and said, I can't talk. We operate under Chatham House rules. So he suddenly realized that he wasn't a fellow member, and he shut up pronto. But just that revelation, A, that we're deciding the future of the world, we need a world government, and B, again, they're talking about a war with Iran, is an alarming revelation. Because, as Tucker explains in the rest of the article, and as we've seen unfolding over the past few weeks, their agenda to exploit the financial crisis to enact global government by posing as the saviors is failing. The EU is collapsing. We now have Paul Volcker, the former Fed chairman, as well as Romano Prodi, and as you said earlier, Sarkozy threatening to quit the euro. Top financial experts, Jim Rogers, numerous others, are saying that basically the euro is in big trouble. Today it's hit a low against the dollar that hasn't been seen since the collapse of Lehman Brothers. Many people saying it's going to parity with the dollar, which hasn't happened for roughly 8 years. And it's in big trouble, and that matters because the euro was sold on the basis that an entire continent using one currency would provide stability. But as we've seen with the situation in Greece, the opposite has proven to be the case, because when one country gets sick, they all get sick. It's contagious. Now we're talking about Portugal, Spain, and Italy going the same way as Greece. They're going to have massive debt burdens which they can't deal with. So the whole European project is in trouble because current events have shown that it just doesn't work. So the ultimate agenda is to introduce a global bank, a bank of the world, allied to a global currency, is in big trouble. And that's what Tucker said. Other Trilateral Commission members told his sources that were in there that, quote, it gets worse every year, not better. Why do we even bother to meet anymore? We can't simply give up and quit, another responded. Bilderberg expects us to have a plan outlined. So Trilateral Commission members, Bilderberg members, are really crestfallen. They're downbeat because their model for economic global governance is falling flat on its face.
And that's right, folks. That's a clip I've played recently on the show because it does take you into the working groups at the very, very top. And when Paul Joseph Watson mentioned that someone who was spoken to by a We Are Change member was operating under, quote, Chatham House rules, C-H-A-T-H-A-M. That is the Royal Institute for International Affairs out of London, England, the RIIA, a.k.a. Chatham House, at chathamhouse.co.org.uk or something. Just Google Chatham House, you'll see it. The original roundtable group, the one that begat, well, not the original of the 21st century, by Cecil Rhodes, the one that begat the infamous Council on Foreign Relations and the others I mentioned at the early part of the show. Well, why did I play that clip? Because basically, you know, hanging out in that hotel, meeting room yesterday, I could feel where that meeting came from. That I was sitting in, a plan at the Club of Rome or Bilderberg Group or Trilateral Commission. This is where they sell it to mid-level, corporate executives at a meeting like the one I was at. A lot of young people there, corporate nights. It's a youthful, do the right thing but still be, a corporate badass type of environment. I've been to these things before I was experienced, and I always found a lot of this stuff boring as hell, and I found this business baby talk absolutely insane, in the sense that, they basically say, here's some quotes from the meeting here. How do we become an energy superpower? A clean energy, they kept talking about superpower. Do we want to be a superpower? Don't you want to be a superpower? And it's like, what are you talking about, superpower? And then, and then they say, there are no more superpowers, but Canada could be a superpower. Don't you want to be a superpower? It says here, we have more energy per capita on the planet than anybody else. But it says most of that energy is where we are not, as in we don't live where that energy is. So I'm scribbling furiously in my notebook when I'm not videotaping this. And so in brackets I put, so use some of our energy to move our energy to where we are. It's just insane. You know, we have lots of energy here, more by far per capita than anybody else in the world. But the problem is it's not located near where we live. And it's like, well, use some of that damn energy to move some of that damn energy over here. Anyway. But, you know, Michael Shaw breaks down Agenda 21 better than I do. So I'm going to let him, with Agenda 21 for Dummies off YouTube, help frame this conversation a bit better. I apologize. There's too many damn thoughts on this. I went over this with my roommate last night. But just too much craziness. So, again, Michael Shaw from freedomadvocates.org. Lawyer, been working on this for a while. You heard from Alex Jones and Paul Joseph Watson about think tanks and at the top. Here is the United Nations agenda to confiscate all of our property and take away our property rights.
Sustainable development has become the popularized expression for Agenda 21. Agenda 21 is the 1992 United Nations Rio Declaration on the environment and development.
It is the agenda for the 21st century you're living in today. For a brave new world where everything that you cherished and held true will no longer exist.
Agenda 21 defines itself as a comprehensive plan of action to be taken globally, nationally, and locally by organizations of the United Nations systems.
It also elevates nature above man. And it contains something called the precautionary principle, where basically you're guilty until you're proven innocent.
Sustainable development is the philosophy designed to bring human beings across the globe under the full control of a narrow human elite.
It's a 40-chapter document to basically control the world. It's based entirely on socialist control mechanisms.
Sustainable developers have designed a global movement coordinated through a global to local action plan to create world government in accordance with certain objectives. These objectives include an end to national sovereignty, the abolition of private property, the restructure of the family unit, and increasing limitations and restrictions on mobility and individual opportunity.
The Green Goal includes the listings of what's not sustainable. A couple of the examples include private property.
728 lists fossil fuels.
Golf courses and ski lodges are not.
Consumerism.
Irrigation is not sustainable.
Paved roads.
Commercial agriculture.
Herbicides, pesticides. Elsewhere, it lists farmlands, pastures, grazing of livestock.
In the family unit.
The focus of sustainable development is the abolition of private property, societal undermining of the family, and abandonment of the constitutional protection of unalienable rights as described in the Declaration of Independence.
You see, I sat on the Santa Cruz Agenda 21 committees. Now, this was a lot of crazy ideas. This is back in the mid-90s. Crazy ideas I heard. Mother Earth's surface wasn't to be scratched. Human beings were to be concentrated into human settlement zones. Educational systems were to focus on the environment as the central organizing principle. All aspects of life were covered. Well, I went to these committees at the request of some people who told me that I needed to understand what was going on. And I came back and I said, this is craziness. This is so silly. It has no chance of having any effect on our society. Well, I was wrong. The United States government's support for sustainable development, Agenda 21, is very clear. In 1992, while the Rio conference was going on, George Bush, then president, was there where he executed the Agenda 21 protocols on behalf of the United States and brought it back to Washington, D.C. Within a year, Bill Clinton, by executive order, no congressional review, established the President's Council for Sustainable Development. In Santa Cruz, we've got a two-lane freeway system. We need four, but what we're getting is hundreds of millions of dollars of federal money to take a dilapidated rail line that Southern Pacific wants to put in the hands of somebody else so that a commuter line can be built along the railroad track
That'll be followed by 14-story buildings where people will live and stack them and pack them units, where developers or so-called sustainable developers will build these high-rises with federal dollars. In fact, Santa Cruz has received a $300 million federal grant to build the first 3,000 of these stack and pack them units. The County Board of Supervisors has said if you are a sustainable developer, you're immune from any construction defect liability. It's a partnership between selected developers building this new world order and the government using the American taxpayer dollars in order to do it. This is a map of the Wildlands Project. To explain the map, the red are areas that are to be off limits to human beings. No resource development, no human activity. If you live there, you won't. The yellow areas are the areas for major control of all human activity. If you live there, you won't. The black areas, the black dots, are the smart growth zones. That's where human beings are to be stacked and packed in small living units along rail tracks. The Smart Growth Program ultimately has jobs assigned and children cared for by the state.
The question has been asked many times how the people who are perpetrating these things expect to do this and make it last. And the answer to that is that you steal a generation of children and you indoctrinate them so that they accept these ideas and they become global citizens in the coming global village.
UNESCO came out and declared 2005 to 2015 the decade of education for sustainable development. But they go on to say that it will encompass the 40 chapters of Agenda 21. That is your federal national curriculum. The entire purpose of second grade social studies is to transfer loyalty from the family to the government and teach them about sustainable economic consumption. Students construct their own understandings of reality and realize that objective reality is not knowable. So why bother? The truth is, the truth, which keeps men free, is being suppressed in order to prop up the attitude training agenda. And it moves on. This is our new math called Connected Mathematics. Standard 3 tells us that students learn that mathematics is man-made, that it is arbitrary, and good solutions are arrived at by consensus. Most of us assume 2 plus 2 is always going to equal 4. You're wrong. We might reach a new consensus. How well does it work? Well, they tell you. In the teacher's guide in the back, it tells us that because the curriculum doesn't emphasize arithmetic computations done by hand, some students may not do as well on tests assessing computational skills. We believe such a trade-off in the favor of CMP is very much to the student's advantage in the world of work. Our children are mathematically illiterate on purpose. How do I know on purpose? Why isn't this just a basic bad idea? Because the Sustainable Development Plan tells us so. Generally, more highly educated people who have higher incomes consume more resources than poorly educated people who tend to have lower incomes. In this case, more education increases the threat to sustainability. Charlotte Iserby, I owe you an apology. I did not believe for the longest time it was a deliberate dumbing down. I thought the dumbing down was a natural consequence of a bad idea. Folks, it's deliberate. It's deliberate.
The sustainable globalist goal is the orchestration of a planned fall of American principles, values, and lifestyles. The effect on the average American will be devastating. With modernizing technology, the ordinary person will live without independence, privacy, or substantive rights.
Another press conference that I attended was the ICLEI group, the International Committee for Local Environmental Initiatives that helps in the implementation of Agenda 21 in all of our local communities. And one of the speakers was a Harvey Rubin, who happens to be the vice chair of ICLEI, And I asked him about the correlative rights that Americans derive from the United States Constitution and the Bill of Rights. And that, of course, is your individual liberties, your private property, your freedom of speech. Asked about it clashing with Agenda 21. And you know what his response was?
Individual rights must take a back seat to the collective.
Sorry, folks, just looking for a clip there. So that gives you an idea of how Agenda 21 is being implemented at the international level. And again, that is the broader framework that's being applied here. And I saw a little piece of that at this meeting. But right now, let's just go through some of the speakers that were here at this event. And one of the reasons I'm focusing on this event is because this is me journalizing. I RSVP'd for the event in the morning. I wasn't online until later. Got there. They didn't have my name tag, but they allowed me to handwrite one and slip into the meeting. I met someone there briefly because I couldn't figure out how to put on my name tag. I'm smart about certain things, not about others. And then I did try and distance myself a bit because I did want to be in the mood to really document this. You know, how are they selling sustainable development and UN Agenda 21 to the corporate sector here in Toronto? One of the people talking about this is Ralph Torrey. Ralph Torrey is a managing director of Navigant Consulting, Inc., and leads the firm's carbon markets and climate change response business activities. He has 35 years' experience in research and business initiatives related to energy and environmental issues, and has particular expertise on energy demand patterns and related greenhouse gas and air pollutant emissions. So he's been pushing this for 35 years. This type of initiative, and starting to see the fruits of his labor becoming realized as the rest of the world is being conformed to United Nations regulations under this go green banner, essentially a new form of communism. Watermelon green on the outside, red on the inside, as they collectivize our behavior, our thought, our actions, and our property under state control, and then eventually under international control. So tons and tons of stuff on there. I'm gonna fly through to a question period here, part of this towards the end, and you can get an idea of how the questions and answers put together by these people. So my question is coming up. They were kind enough to give me the microphone. I was kind enough to be polite, but I still got a real question in. You keep talking about Canadian energy policy like we're writing it, but I've heard differently. So
that's what it would be designed to do, is to deal with both technology risk and attract that capital flow.
Hi there, I'm Ms. McCall. You said you went to the Copenhagen climate change negotiations, and I heard with the United Nations agreements, Agenda 21 for sustainability, the ICLEI organization, International Council for Local Environmental Initiatives at 401 Richmond Street at Spadina. I've heard a lot of the policies are being sort of directed internationally at the United Nations level, and yet we're talking a lot about Canadian energy policy, Canadian energy security. So maybe Mr. Salzman or any one of you folks can explain who exactly is writing policy. Is it the United Nations and international organizations like ICLEI that roll out programs in cities throughout the world, or is it our elected politicians here in Canada, or is it both, and can you define that relationship, please?
Nice, simple question, thanks. I guess this is a conundrum in this conversation, because yes, there are international frameworks
yes, there's an international discussion, but one of the shifts in Copenhagen from the Kyoto conversation is that there was, you know, a demand for different reasons from different countries that the approach on this, that energy transformation had to be built bottom up within jurisdictions. And the energy issues and the energy systems that we're talking about are really local and regional. You know, when I talked about us as an exporting nation, it's, yes, we're an exporting nation, but we're an exporting nation within a North American, primarily in a North American reality. So the answer to your question is all of the above. Yes, there's an international conversation. Yes, there may be a North American conversation. There are municipal, provincial, federal. But at some point, we want to just, you know, Clarity announced today that we're going to do something about interprovincial trade barriers. Why would we, knowing that that's a problem for us, why would we start to create a system on this and on energy that would put barriers up? Why wouldn't we build a smart system from the beginning?
The people writing the regulations, people involved in it, are overwhelmingly the corporate sector. Enron was at Kyoto writing, drafting the Kyoto Protocol along with the insurance sector. And the insurance sector was actually pushing climate change long before environmentalists caught on to the issue. The recent climate change bill that passed in the U.S. House last year, it was written by BP and many other multinationals that are part of this consortium that is deciding what our energy future is going to be. There are some environmental groups as part of that consortium, but it's widely acknowledged that it's the corporate, the multinationals in that group that actually did the majority of the writing of the legislation. Companies have figured out how to game the system. They're not dummies. They're pushing the climate change agenda they have from the start.
Anything, two more questions, but real quick, Ralph, do you want to respond to that?
One hardly knows where to begin, but for the record, the insurance industry showed up, I think, for the first time in 1995 at the Berlin Conference of Parties, having been convinced by Greenpeace, of all organizations, that they needed to be taking an active role in the international climate negotiations. The reason that they were convincible flies in the face of some of the other things Larry has been saying today, which is that they were the ones paying the claims on the exponentially increasing rate of weather-related disasters that have been occurring throughout the world. And therefore, in the entire business community, it was actually the insurance industry that first started to become concerned, because they were dealing with actually writing the checks to pay for this phenomenon, which Larry says doesn't exist. In response, however, to the questioner's question about local government, this is something that is quite unique to climate change, in the sense that as we move into the sustainable future, many of the solutions will necessarily have to be developed at the community level. There will be common principles and so on. By its very nature, the sustainable energy future is connected to so many of the levers of policy that are operated at the local government level, whether it has to do with land use, green spaces, transportation policy, transit policy, parking policy, transit prices, zoning, neighborhood design, proximity of workplaces. All of that stuff comes under the purview of local government in most places in the world. And there is no solution to climate change that can be executed without the active and enthusiastic engagement of the local government sector.
And we're back to KLM listeners. So that, again, that was Mr. Ralph Torrey answering my question quite honestly about global government, which he even mentions, global government, right there. So it's fascinating to be in this scenario, in this meeting, with a bunch of like-minded people. I think I was marked as soon as I got there. I was dressed kind of flashy yesterday. kind of like the Joker, actually. But felt like you're going to start dressing up a little bit more these days, just hitting the streets as I campaign a bit. And as it's easier for me to go to meetings like this, be nice, but just get everything they say and ask a key question here or there. And the audience takes as well. I got to say a couple of things happen. All right, so what you just heard was me saying, look, I've heard there's international bodies dictating, energy policy, and so what's up with that? And you saw the answers. First of all, there was Ms. Velma McCall. Velma McCall joined Earnscliffe in February 2004. Ms. McCall served as both senior policy and communication advisors to federal cabinet ministers across four portfolios, environment, industry, health, and fisheries and oceans. In these capacities, she played her leading role in issues such as climate change, energy, regional economic development, Canada's competitiveness, and innovation challenges and sustainable development. She has an interest in alternate dispute resolution and has worked to find creative solutions across federal, provincial, territorial, and international boundaries. And so she's a diehard globalist by training. Lovely blonde woman and attractive middle-aged and so on. But you could see, and I got, again, a lot of this on video, you could see her really, really shrinking when Lawrence Solomon, one of Canada's leading environmentalists, his book The Conservative Solution, Doubleday, popularized the Conservative Society concept in the late 70s. He became a manual for those interested in incorporating environmental factors into economic life, advisor to President Carter, and he's a columnist with the National Post and a former columnist for The Globe and Mail. And he is also an author. He's also a diehard opponent of the climate change theory. He brought up in his 8-minute talk there, because each of these people had 8 minutes or 10 minutes or so to speak and give their position. He completely floored the room by saying, he started off his talk saying, and I'm going to play a clip of this next week, I think, because it was just too brilliant what he did. Because in a nutshell, you hear it at this event, fairly dry and generic presentations about, how screwed we all are if we don't do something about this climate change thing. And how even if it's not real, the market seems to be going there anyway. So if Canada wants to remain competitive, well, we have to do it anyway. So this is all a question of, here's what we have to do. Here's exactly why we have to do it. And here's why if we don't do it, we're totally screwed. Now we invite your feedback. And so you say, well, I think we should do this. And then they say, yeah, the business leader spoke. They demanded it. So this is how they build international communist consensus. But Mr. Solomon started off his 8-minute talk by saying, we have all the oil we need and more, enough to last for hundreds of years. We have all the natural gas we need and more, enough to last for hundreds of years. There are huge parts of the earth that remain yet unexplored. And we can, certainly try and find more in those. But we should have toll roads. And he's in favor of toll roads to cut down on congestion. Raising gas taxes and prices doesn't necessarily work quite as well as toll roads, as Europe is currently experimenting with. I interviewed him personally at the end, briefly for a few minutes. I kind of tipped my hand a bit because I knew where he was coming from. So I said, yeah, I've been on this since March 07. And, I take it all the way back to the Club of Rome. I asked him for his solutions, and I just said, as a conservative, are you sure you want to be pushing for extra taxes? And he, got a little miffed at that. I don't quite have time to play that today, but I will play that next week. Nice enough guy, though, and I treat everybody really well. I've said not nice things about the Queen of England, because I think that she's one of the main architects of our current state of descending globalist tyranny on us. And yet, if I was talking to her, I'd be perfectly nice. I'd stick out my pinky while drinking tea, and I would literally ask for, what her thoughts were. Like, how do you think? I'm not trying to get your goat. I'm trying to get your great. Like, what do you actually believe? What are you passionate about? What's your thing? And if you go off on being, an elitist, eugenicist, world enslaver, and I get the raw from you on that data, then that'd be ideal. So anyway, you have Mr. Evan Solomon from the CBC hosting it. You got Mr. Ralph Torrey, author and an environmental business consultant, first speaker. Ms. Velma McCall, government analyst, big promoter of climate change and sustainable development policy, second speaker. The third speaker of the evening was Mr. Don Roberts, vice chairman of wholesale banking and managing director in investment banking with the Canadian Imperial Bank of Commerce, CIBC. He's responsible for the bank's corporate lending, debt and equity financing, M&A advisory, and trading activities across the clean technology and renewable energy sectors, and is also actively involved in the forest products industry. During a sabbatical year in 2009, Mr. Roberts led the Future Biopathways Project on behalf of the Forest Products Association of Canada, which explored transformational strategies for the Canadian forest industry. He also developed a business plan for CIBC to build a banking franchise in the clean technology and renewable energy space. And Mr. Roberts was a very engaging speaker, in all fairness, quite dynamic, but he said straight up, he said, capital needs TLC. Capital, meaning finance capital, money. If you want money in this country, you got to show them a little tender love and care. And so that was really his angle. And in response to Mr. Lawrence Larry Solomon's from the National Post claims about climate change, he just said, it doesn't matter if it's real or not. You know, this is where we're going. And because this is where we're going, we better get there or Canada will get left behind. The final speaker was Tom Rand. And Tom Rand, very good-looking guy in the classic neo-yippie kind of way. Tall, good-looking, lantern jaw, and just graying enough, and well-cut and well-coiffed hair. It says here, Tom Rand is a venture capitalist and author and currently acts as lead clean tech advisor at the Mars Institute in Toronto. Mars acts to support commercialization of Canadian research and development. He founded VCI Green Funds in 2005, a private venture fund to provide angel and venture capital companies developing emission reduction technologies. And he's also co-developer of the Planet Traveler, North America's quote greenest hotel, located in Toronto. He's a hardcore, diehard, you know, climate change advocate. We got to do something about this, or we're all going to die. He spoke right after Larry Solomon from the National Post, and while Larry Solomon talked in very, very specific terms about how Copenhagen was rejected, the Copenhagen Treaty, which I made a lot of noise about last November and December, because it was a world government treaty which, if signed, would have sped up a lot of world government changes even more, and put us deeper into trouble. Fortunately, a bunch of countries backed out of it, so they kind of settled for a watered-down version, but they're still pushing ahead at the local level. He's a big supporter of all these initiatives. And Lawrence Solomon talked about ClimateGate emails, talked about how countries like Spain, Italy, and others are realizing, you know, that green jobs barely produce any jobs, and they're moving away from this whole fraud of ClimateGate and getting suckered into, you know, transforming their economies around these flawed principles of saying carbon dioxide, what we exhale, which plants actually breathe and love, is actually bad for the earth and is going to raise the temperature when it's only 4% of greenhouse gases in total. And what humans produce, regardless, is only a fraction of that, because most of it's produced by volcanoes erupting, fish exhaling, and then the ocean kind of pumping it back up, and animals exhaling and so on. So, you know, we contribute a tiny fraction of carbon dioxide, and that contributes a tiny fraction to climate change. But Mr. Tom Rand from the Mars Institute in Toronto gets up there and says, "Well, we all know it's changing. We all know the climate's changing, there's going to be droughts in a few years, and then there's the meditating bug, and the leaf-eating frog, and they're all going to die if we don't do this. So, you know, you can believe it, but at what point will it be too late? At what point will it be too late for you to, you know?" And this is after Larry Solomon from the National Post said, the reason that we can't really, you know, double check to prove they're wrong is because they destroyed the data. After getting caught lying, they destroyed the data on climate change. A couple more bullet points before I lead you back to Michael Clifton for your jazz bungee taking over for Mr. Bill Watson. Again, wish Mr. Watson all the best in his recovery. This is another basically CFR working group. And here we go. Ralph Torrey, these are sort of his 6 points here. One is being a clean energy superpower. Number two is clean energy. Number three is energy as a commodity. Keep in mind, folks, there are huge carbon markets. Al Gore, one of the leading proponents of the climate change myth, has, his companies are heavily leveraged in the carbon credit market. So they create this market, this derivatives market, much like the other stock frauds that have gone on recently that have endangered the financial welfare of the world. They created a new one around the green economy. And so they are pushing it to capitalize on that, to gamble in that space. Unique relationships, public policy, and so on. And what they're doing right now with the problem-reaction-solution technique is they're saying to the left out there, look, if you don't want any more wars for oil, if you don't want any more gunboat diplomacy, then switch over to green energy. The problem is the same people are going to be in charge, and if they were in favor of gunboat diplomacy before, then, you know, maybe they won't do it for oil, maybe they'll do it for something else. Also, the amount of energy being produced by current green energy technology, especially things like 500-year-old windmills, they're now selling us again. Samsung just got a contract here in Ontario to build a bunch. 500-year-old windmill technology, Dutch pot-smoking Dutch technology, being sold as the latest thing we can do. So this is a plan to de-industrialize the world, as you heard Michael Shaw and some other freedom advocates from freedomadvocates.org say earlier, and so on. I'm going to go into this a bit more later, but I'm going to give the floor over to Michael Clifton. I'm going to leave you with my song, On to the Next No One World Government, which I produced around the time of the Copenhagen Agreement to remind us of where this is going and why we don't want it to get there. A bit scattershot today, folks. Tons of thoughts in my mind after just attending this globalist meeting, but hope you understand. It's been Thursday, May 27th, 2010. This has been your host, Black Krishna, reporting from CFR-style roundtable yesterday. Peace out, everybody.
I got a million ways to get it. Choose one. It's going down. The New World Order's getting clowned. On to the next No One World Government. Take your carbon tax and start shoving it. On to the next No One World Government. Take your carbon tax and start shoving it. Hold up. When tax coming in like Pavlov, they treat us like dogs to use less than them. Ooh. Rockefeller's at the top, pledge allegiance to the rock, eyes wide shut, doc, PhDs make disease for militaries, don't think they wouldn't lie for the IPCC, can't get the weather for the week, and please, telling me in 20 years, we guarantee to freeze, Newsweek cover 4, a 70s scene, global cooling back then, global woman now please, cease and desist, this is the citizens of risk and development. Licking menace, yuppie puppy dog, recycled Tommy Rottweiler, socialist with a fist of your assets, smiling like they're saving the earth by enslaving the earth, both enslaving paving graves in the third world first world got thirst, greenwashing won't work, I'm not working out a problem, I'm a problem at work, I'm being a problem for jerks who lack fine tax, and increase the attacks till there's no going back, there's always going back, piece of paper don't eject, little bin mat like bin Laden, bin found back. When the war on terror rapture was taking all our rights. Now the global warring rapture takes our stuff, gotta fight. Tough love, don't bite, but don't get bitten by the hardcore mind control victims in a prison plant. .com, drop bombs, pile Joe Blow. Another scandal, Climategate show. They know they lie, admit they emails, trying East Anglia you. Finding angles all the time and caught just in time to stop us coping with enslavement. Better fly her up and hit the pavement, straight up. Hold up. Depop,
full of trouble, I'm gonna hustle harder than the bars of BS. Let's rumble. Can't be stopped. Plans popping off a lot. Take a shot for you. Been laid and blocked. Do you stop and think if they really care what they try to stop? GMO food, mercury, and real toxic plot. Waste mine on disaster predictions. Based on fiction, this a movie. Dereliction of duty. The prescription. Let's see the uniform. Learn what's going on. Attack like Voltron till the Gorbot's gone. An addiction for freedom you keep for you and your children. Can't be chilling when it's chilly. And green villains say it isn't. Oh, no matter what, it's our fault. Earth worship death calls. To heck with people now. What about the weather later? What?